MacCast, Tuesday, July 8th, 2014. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Feels like we haven't talked in a while, and we haven't. Thank you for those of you who emailed me just to check in. Really what happened was I was sort of on an unplanned hiatus, or really it was just something I didn't kind of think about. As many of you know, if you've listened to this show for years, I do a trip every summer to Pismo Beach, California, where we go camping for a week. And usually that happens right during WWDC. But if you watched your feed this year, you noticed I was around for WWDC. So we had pushed our normal trip back toward the end of the month. And so I was taking a vacation and then realized right after I got back from vacation was Nerdtacular, which is the other big event that I go to every year besides Macworld. And that is the Frog Pants Network, Scott Johnson's big Nerd Geek Fest conference in Utah up in Snowbird. So I was then up there and just with all the traveling and getting ready and all the stuff that was going on, plus some other things that were going on in my life. I missed a show, actually kind of a couple shows. You're getting basically a 2-week hiatus. And, so that was what was going on. I just wanted to explain that. So thanks for sticking with me. Thanks for checking in, all that fun stuff, but that's what happened. But we are back. We are going to get into all of the Mac and Apple stuff. Actually, in this episode, it's a little bit abbreviated because at Nerdtacular, I did some great interviews with folks like Tom Merritt and Scott Johnson and Brian Dunaway. We did our whole What the App Is That segment. And if you remember that from last year, many of you enjoyed that, so I wanted to do that again. That's the thing where I grab someone's phone at Nerdtacular, I flip through, I find an app that I don't recognize, and then we talk about it. I think it's a great way to discover apps. It's kind of an offshoot. I got the idea because so many of us, the way you find out about apps is from your friends, right? It's the stuff that they have on their devices. So I thought, what if we could just look in on someone's device and find those apps that they keep installed and that they have on there? And it's worked out great. So we're going to do that in this episode. On the back half, we have a little bit of iPhone 6 stuff to talk about here on the front. But before we get into everything, I want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors, and that is Gazelle. You know, I absolutely think Gazelle is a great service. We got the iPhone 6 coming out soon, and maybe you want to get some cash for that old device to kind of help make that new purchase a little less painless. And one of the reasons I love Gazelle is because they make the process of selling your phone painless. Yeah, you could do it yourself. You could use an auction site or an online classified or something like that, but that's a lot of hassle. You got to worry about fraud and all that stuff. So why spend all that time? Why have to worry about everything? Why have to worry about haggling and shipping and maybe even getting ripped off? Gazelle is right there and they make it super easy. You just go to gazelle.com, you do a search, they give you an offer, you ship it to them, and then you get paid. It really is just that simple. And in some cases, they'll even send you a box and they buy broken items. So you don't have to worry about that. You can still get an offer on that broken iPhone and get some cash. That's better than having to recycle it and just get rid of it and get nothing. So they do pay quickly. You get paid by check, by PayPal, and you can even get 5% more if you choose to get paid via Amazon gift card. That's actually how I got paid for my last couple of iPhones. So if you have an old Apple product, a cell phone, a tablet, you want to turn that into cash, I say give Gazelle a try. You can check it all out over at gazelle.com. Get your offer today, and a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. Before we get into the interviews, I wanted to update you on some of the latest on the iPhone 6. A lot has been happening. We've been seeing a lot more leaks, images, different kinds of parts, and it's looking to be more and more legitimate the more of these that come out. Now, some are coming from Chinese sources that tend to be a little less reliable, but then we have sources like Sunny Dixon releasing stuff, and he's proven very accurate in the past. So I'm starting to kind of fall in line with some of these rumors, and I feel a little bit better about talking about them. This week, we saw a Chinese site claiming that the iPhone would be announced on September 15th and go on sale the 25th. Now, I don't think those dates are quite accurate. I'm going to explain why here in a second. But they also claimed that the 5.5-inch model, the larger version of the iPhone 6, would be called the iPhone Air. That, I don't think, is happening at all. I think that's a bit ridiculous. But the September launch was reportedly confirmed, according to Mac Rumors, by one of their reliable sources. So it does seem to be that's where the time frame would be. The dates, though, are a bit off. Typically, Apple does launch the iPhone on a Friday. So the 26th would actually be, or the 25th, rather, would be a Thursday. The 26th would be more likely if it was in that time frame. But if you look at the past couple of years, the past couple of launches, they were earlier in September. So based on that, I would predict that we would get an announcement if it happens in September on the 9th, and then a launch date about 10 days later on the 19th. So that would make a lot more sense. We also saw videos and images of the front panel surfacing, the 4.7-inch model. It definitely has a much thinner bezel. It's said that the new iPhone is going to be between 6 millimeters and 7 millimeters thin, closer to the thickness of an iPod Touch, which is about 6.1 millimeters in the current model. For comparison, if you have an iPhone 5S, that's about 7.6 millimeters. So they're going to shave about half a millimeter, actually more than a half a millimeter off that, and it's going to fall somewhere probably 6.1 to 6.5 millimeters in thickness. Also, looking at this new front panel, some of the images that have been surfacing, it appears that the front FaceTime camera has been moved from the top above the speaker over to the left. And I'm guessing they did that so that they could have more room for the larger display without actually having to add more height to the physical device. And we had been hearing these rumors that the display might be curved. The curve, if you're looking at the images and if you've seen the videos, seems a little bit more like it's just beveled. It's rounded around the edges. So I don't know if that means the screen's going to be more kind of sitting on the top and that rounded edge will kind of fade down into the metal edge of the iPhone, or if it'll actually be inset a little bit. My guess is it's the former, that it's going to kind of sit on top and just be part of the curve. That also, by the descriptions and some of the mock-ups we've seen, is going to have a curved back. Again, think like the iPod Touch if you look at that kind of shape. And so it would make sense that the front glass kind of has a curve and then the back metal also has kind of a matching roundness to it. Should feel really good in your hand. I'm getting pretty excited about the designs. Now, some reports say that the 4.7-inch panel, while bigger, is still usable with one hand. Actually, we saw a video kind of demonstrating that. I say that's stretching it a bit, and that bad pun was intended. There was a lot of hand juggling going on. That whole thing, and I actually do this with my iPhone 5S right now, just a little bit, to get to kind of some of the top edges and things like that. With one hand, you kind of slide it back and forth. Doing that with a 4.7-inch model, you have to do that quite a bit more, and I think that you would risk dropping your device. I don't know that I would feel really comfortable doing that. It, you know, could possibly just slide out of your hand. So I really think at 4.7 inches and definitely on the 5.5 inch, you're looking at a two-handed device. I think Apple's going to lose that marketing effort. They often said that they didn't want to increase the size because they wanted that one-handed control. And I actually use my phone one-handed a lot, so I'm going to be a bit bummed about losing that ability. But there was a great video that surfaced this past week showing the sapphire glass front panel, allegedly a legitimate part. This was the one that came via Sonny Dixon, according to the guy that posted the video. So there is some amount of legitimacy to that. He maybe got his hands on some of these parts. I think he posted on his own Twitter feed even some images at some point. But the guy put it through a torture test. He took out a knife. He tried to scratch it. He tried to stab it, threw keys at it. And he says it came out completely unscathed, that you couldn't even tell anything happened to it. And we do know that about sapphire glass, that it's super scratch resistant and durable. So that seemed to be the case. What was more surprising was he actually bent the glass, because sapphire historically has had less of a reputation of being as durable as Gorilla Glass when it comes to impact, cracking, and I would assume flexing. Now, maybe those two things are different. And actually, he, you know, obviously he didn't have an iPhone 6, so wasn't able to do any kind of drop tests. But he flexed the heck out of that glass, and it did not break. Even stepping on it at one point on one edge and pulling up on the other edge, probably bending it, I would guess, a good 30 degrees or so. I mean, it had a nice arc to it, almost to the point where it could have been bent into a circle, just a little bit less than that, and it did not break. He also noted that it was extremely clear, sapphire crystal, extremely clear, one of the reasons why it's used for the Touch ID sensor and also for the lens covers on the current iPhone, for the cameras, because you can see right through it. And he kept coming back and mentioning how clear it was, even holding the display up to his camera lens so you could see how crystal clear it was with the with it going through the camera lens and giving an image of him. So it seems like Sapphire is going to be very, very impressive. The other thing to note was the panel that he had was a 4.7-inch panel. So we had heard rumors that maybe only the 5.5-inch model was going to get the Sapphire glass. It's looking like the 4.7 and the 5.5 will both have Sapphire glass displays. Some of the other things we've been hearing about the iPhone 6 design, the volume buttons are expected to be more pill-shaped. Again, think like the iPod Touch and not those round ones that we have on the current model. It's also expected to pack a little bit bigger battery. The 4.7-inch model is said to pack an 1,800 milliamp hour battery, and the 5.5-inch would get a whopping 2,500 milliamp hour battery. Now, that's a big jump up for Apple's iPhones, but would still be smaller capacities than some of their competitors' devices at the same screen size. Now, Apple does tend to use the battery more efficiently than, say, Android, so that may not, you know, that may mean that Apple's next generation iPhones are going to have battery lives that are similar, but the increase could also be eaten up by the larger screen, meaning, you know, in my opinion, I wouldn't expect much in the way of battery gain with the new models. I'm guessing that Apple's going to target the same battery life as the iPhone 5S, so somewhere in that 10 hours of usable life range, which, again, is going to put them a little bit behind their competitors in terms of battery life, but still very good battery performance out of the iPhone 6. Both versions are also expected to get a faster A8 processor and very likely enhanced cameras. The one thing we've been hearing is that the larger iPhone, the 5.5-inch model, might have some extras that the 4.7-inch doesn't. Things like optical image stabilization, maybe a bigger storage option. So I'm thinking 128 gigabytes of flash, and it's also expected to carry about $100 price premium. So $100 more than the comparable 4.7-inch models for the different storage sizes. So if you want a 5.5-inch model, expect to be paying a little bit more. The good news is that we had been hearing the 5.5-inch model might be delayed, but Bloomberg recently suggested that both devices could launch at the same time. So you might not have to wait to get the larger iPhone. Although I would think that the larger one, because we've been hearing about production issues, might be in shorter supply. So you're really going to have to jump on that if you want to get the 5.5-inch model. Something I'm a little bit bummed about personally with the 5.5-inch is if it does have better cameras, some better specs, I'm going to be put in a quandary. And I mentioned this to a couple people at Nerdtacular. You know that I'm not a big fan of the gigantophones, the larger screen phones, but I also want to have the best Apple device that I can have for what is out currently. That's, you know, I tend to buy the highest end model, and if it's going to be the 5.5-inch, I may end up with a larger phone than I really want. So I'm hoping that the only difference in spec is the screen size and that everything else is equal, but right now it's not sounding like that would be the case. And then good news this week on the design. If you had been seeing the mock-ups, some of the things that had been surfacing in terms of the, especially the back of the phone, you kind of had these weird caps on the end where you had an antenna break that kind of went all the way around the end caps. Now, on the current iPhone 5S, what you have there is glass and then the metal, and it looks beautiful. In these mock-ups, what we were seeing was sort of metal in both places, and it led to this weird sort of outline around the end caps, and I thought it was really, really ugly. The news site Nikkei claims that those ugly antenna breaks that we've been seeing in those leaks are just placeholder in the current designs, and that they will be replaced by glass, just like in the iPhone 5S when it launches. And I think Martin Hajek even did some design mock-ups based on some of the new information, and it looks much, much better. So think more of an iPod Touch kind of shape, but with a similar design, at least in terms of the back, to the iPhone 5S. And I think with it looking like that, it looks gorgeous. So Jonathan Ive is not going to have to give up his design card. I was saying if the mock-up came out and it looked, or if the phone came out and it looked like the mock-ups we had been seeing, that Johnny Ive needs to have his design card revoked, because they were not looking good, folks, and at least not in my opinion. So very happy to hear this last rumor. And with that, that is all the latest on the iPhone 6. Let's get into my Nerdtacular coverage. For those of you who don't know, Nerdtacular is this great geek culture conference, podcast conference. They talk about comic books, video games, tabletop games, and, of course, podcasts. They actually have a really great podcast track, so if you're a podcaster, you should check it out. It's a conference run every year in Utah by Scott Johnson. He runs the Frog Pants Network. We're actually going to hear from him in the first interview, and he'll explain a little bit more about the show, but happens every year in July. You can get more information and figure out what's happening with Nerdtacular 2015 if you'd like to go over at nerdtacular.com. But as I was mentioning in the intro, last year when I went to Nerdtacular, there's so many great podcasters and folks there. I really wanted to do some interviews, and I also thought, you know, I want to give something back to you. So something that I get asked about very frequently is, hey, what are some really good apps, and how do you find apps? And so I thought, we'll do a little thing. I called it What the App Is That, and it's returning for its second annual appearance. And I take a look at the person's phone, locate an app icon that I don't recognize, and then interview them about it. And it worked so great last year, I wanted to do it again. And, you know, side benefit, we get to talk to some really cool people. So let's play What the App Is That from Nerdtacular 2014.
Scott Johnson, creator, founder, father of Nerdtacular, why we are all here, among just a plethora of podcasts, Morning Stream. I'll say ELR only because I want to say that, but it's not there anymore. it is morphed into the Frog Pants Network, and I'll let Scott talk about that in a little bit. But we got to do first things first. What the app is that?
Oh, you want to know what this app is?
I was browsing through your phone. I found an app called Paperama. What the heck is Paperama?
Well, when I first saw it, I thought it was, it looked like one of those scanner apps, right? Yeah. Where you scan something in and then make a PDF and send it to somebody or whatever.
Well, actually, I saw the icon. I thought it was going to teach me origami, like how to fold, yeah, like little, you know, penguins and things like that. Yeah.
So it looks like you're going to make your a paper crane or something. But it turns out it is a game called Paperama, and I'll load it up here real quick just to give you an idea. But the whole concept is... Oh, well, one of the concepts is there's lots of ads. There we go.
So it's a freebie, freemium?
Freemium game. It's pretty high up in the App Store right now and is doing rather well. People like it. So I'll just click on one of these and show you kind of how this works. And this is obviously very visual for audio show here. But the idea is in 4 folds or less, I have to get this entire blue piece of paper in that little square.
Okay, so what we've got is a huge square, and there's a little outline of a smaller square. And you drag the corners or edges and sort of fold it up and try and make it fit within the little box.
Yeah, and I don't remember how to do this very well.
And Scott's going to lose.
Yeah, so I didn't. It was not sufficient, only 39%, so that's kind of terrible. But there are much easier ones than this where it's like, oh, in half and then over. But it's like those old geometry tests where you're not sure how that triangle is going to hold everything, but it is mathematically possible to fold all in the right places to get it all in that shape. And it's addicting as crap. You just want to keep going and keep doing them. And super easy to play. Lots of like nice little folding sort of touch technology happening. Perfect for like a touch interface, which is like something I always look for in a good app. So yeah, when I've been in between prepping for Nerdtacular and needed distractions, this thing has provided plenty of that.
So it looks like, too, it's got that whole star mechanism that a lot of these games use, where 1, 2, or 3 stars, so you can progress through the levels, but you you know, ultimately the goal is you want 3 stars on everything, right?
So if you want to max the thing out and do it perfectly, the goal is to get as much in the white lines as you can. So I got 100% on that one, and it gave me all 3 stars.
So as few folds as possible to get to the target shape.
Correct. And you have a limit of, say, 3 on this one, but if you can do it in 2, then, you know, Bob's your uncle. You win everything. But I haven't been able to do that yet. It's always been the limit, so I'm not very great at it. But, yeah, I this is one of those where it strikes me as a great thing for adults to mess around with and have a good time with. But this, I think, would be great for kids, just to teach them all about sort of spatial stuff and get their head thinking ahead about, well, if I fold that way, that's going to afford me this next fold. And something about that is a very sort of training kind of exercise for younger minds. So I'd highly recommend this for kids.
Visual spacing and stuff like that. Yeah, I remember I had a book when, or my dad had a book when I was a kid. It was this really old book, probably from the 40s or 50s that he had, that was all about paper folding with some like savant guy that did all this amazing paper folding, and it had stuff like that. And I used to sit with that book and try and like figure out how to fold these things. So this would be a very similar kind of thing, it looks like.
Yeah, it's great. I you know, there are a lot of apps on the store that are free and then are filled with freemium garbage and stuff you don't want to mess with or dink around with, or things that make you mad the way they do their monetization. And it is somewhat refreshing once in a while to find a full fleshed out game that isn't trying to nickel and dime you with every turn or make it so you can't play it very much unless you want to throw money at it. Yeah. So the kind of value you're getting for it being free then drives me to want to maybe throw a little money at it, or to undo ads and turn them off or whatever. That's when I know it's a developer I want to keep an eye on and see what they do next.
Right. So what is the thing on this? So it's free. We saw an ad. Is it just ad supported, or is there like
ad? So far, is all I've ever seen. I know that if you go to the level screen, I want to say you can. Somebody told me you could unlock these early. I may not be right about that. Let's see. Yeah, there's a store. Let's find out. Oh, I see. Buy additional hints. So if you're really struggling, and later in levels, you do. It's hard. So you can, for a buck, you can buy 3 additional hints, 10 additional hints for $1.99, and 100 hints for $14.99. So they have decided that hints is a valuable commodity here. And I can see, as I've gotten later levels, why that would be and how you might start struggling with figuring stuff out, and the way to do it would to buy more hints. But if that's all they ever want me to do, I'm cool with that. And occasionally I may do that. I mean, throwing a dollar at something I'm enjoying. That's the thing about this freemium model today. I don't have a problem with it. I just don't like the implementation sometimes. Sometimes I think developers forget where people find value. They don't find value in constantly being told, hey, for just a buck, you can now play our game. They see the value in added stuff in games that are already good. In other words, they've already said, here's a good game. We know that it's good and it plays on its own. Forget about any of the payment models. If it's good enough, enough of you will want to pay because you're finding value in it. I'm always willing to put money into something that's giving me value. I'm not interested in just playing games absolutely for free and I'm never going to have to pay a dime. I want to play something that's great, and if it's great and then there are things I can do and enhance my experience and pay for it, I'll totally do that.
Yeah, yeah. I you know, listeners of my show know I'm not a fan at all of the whole freemium model. And I think you're right. Implementation is a big part of it. Like, some implementations I'm okay with. Others are really annoying. The one option I wish more developers would look into is some sort of option where I can pay a flat rate and sort of unlock everything. That's my favorite, because I'm happy to pay $20, $25 for a really great app if I can have like all the levels and just never have to buy again. I sometimes have a problem when it's, you know, $20 and you get 100 shots, and then those get used up really fast, and then they want another $20.
Yeah, the ones I don't like most probably are the timer stuff. Like, you only got so much energy. To buy more Energon cubes or whatever, you got to spend a buck to do that. That insults my intelligence, because what that tells me is they are implementing a mechanic that's supposed to feel real, like some arbitrary timer thing that's just there for the money. And that drives me crazy. So I think the problem is, and the reason the reason there's a lot of split as to who likes this, who hates this, is we're in the Wild West period of it. And that Wild West period means a lot of experimentation, people trying different things. Some games will come out, and the developers will really impress me because I'll hate their freemium model, and they'll say, you know what, we don't like how this turned out at launch, so we are going to go back and rework it. Dungelot 2 did this, and they came back with a far superior, better game and fixed all those problems and brought me back. And I think that the one thing it's easy to do in the video game business is forget that there's a chance to go back and fix it. it isn't, and be open with your community and being willing to say, yeah, that may have been a little too much on that side, so we're going to dial it back. I think we live in a time now where players appreciate that kind of feedback, that kind of communication, and we're more willing to give them second chances. I mean, we're talking about dollar apps, right. $5 here, whatever, so there's very little to lose. There's much more to gain if you play your PR right, and I see more developers doing that now, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, this is a very, very good point. Well, let's talk a little bit about Nerdtacular and this thing for people who might not know what this is. If they listen to my show, they probably should know by now, because I come here every year. I love this show. I get to come. I get to geek out. I get to play board games. But, you know, it's a gathering of nerds, right?
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing started as just a... I don't know what it was when we began. I think it was just like an excuse to see a movie. We're like, hey, everybody, we'll rent a movie theater and we'll all have a good day on a Saturday. And it's just kind of organically grown from that. And everybody always talks about it. We just got done with a breakfast where that's all anyone talked about is how nice everybody is. And that's probably my favorite part. We decided to keep it relatively small. We capped the tickets around 700 people. And we could go bigger, but we've opted not to. And I say we, I mean me and my team of people who helped me do it, and they're all amazing. Couldn't do this without them, but by keeping it small and manageable, I can have these personal interactions with people and really learn from everybody else. I can spend time with you. I can spend time with other podcasting friends. I can sit down with somebody I've never met before who can tell me some amazing life story or how one of my shows affected them or how my artwork changed somebody's outlook or whatever. And I'm always blown away by that stuff, and it happens every year. Somebody will sit down and just tell me sometimes wonderful, sometimes horrifying stories about something they've been through, and how just some little thing I said on some show turned them around. That's the kind of feedback you can't pay for. I mean, it's just insane. But that kind of camaraderie and that friendship and that just general vibe of we're all in this together is kind of what drives it now. And there are times I feel like it doesn't even need me to make that happen, because it's just such a good collective, and everybody's just sharing in the same, I don't know, this minutia that I could leave for a day and nobody would notice, because it's just a good, fun thing. We were talking down there joking about it, but Tom Merritt once said the line to me, because I was talking about it. I said, I don't know how I get all these great people around me. I have no idea how am I collaborating with him or you or anybody else. He says, you get the chat room you deserve. And that goes both ways. You know, if you're a jerk, you're going to attract jerks. And if you're not, you're not. So, you know, if I provide anything, it's just maybe the seed of, you know, there's a great way to find unity online and avoid the kind of troll atmosphere that sometimes dominates the discussion, and carve out an area that's safe and comfortable and that kids can come to and that adults can come to and people can be themselves and not worry about being judged and all that. If that's the genesis of this, then I'm proud of that. But the continuation of it really just comes down to how rad everybody is. I mean, everybody's so nice.
Yeah, my favorite part is, you know, and this happens multiple times. I mean, hundreds of times probably over the weekend I'm here, is that, you know, you see someone walking around kind of looking for a group, and they maybe seem a little shy or something like that. And I just kept saying to people, sit down, you know, there's no judging here, which is awesome. You know, it's just everybody's open and welcome. And I've met so many awesome people through here and made new friends. And, you know, I think venue is a big part of it too. I've talked to people about conferences. You know, there's lots of conferences you can choose to go to, but I think some of the best ones are about venue, and you picked an awesome venue here at Snowbird. What I like is everybody's all in one place, and you're kind of forced to stick together, and that opens up the whole relationship thing. And I think a lot of people, if they're like me, they come to conferences because you want to network.
And plus, you have room to breathe. You know, you don't have to be crammed in with 45,000 people like a Comic-Con or something every minute of the day, and strangers you don't know. And that's true. While there are strangers here you don't know, the sort of intimate nature of it means that you can plop down and talk to anybody. And every year there's somebody who says, well, I didn't come the last couple years. I was terrified to come meet everybody. And I always feel bad, because I just think, well, this is the one to come to. Like, yeah. Be afraid of Comic-Con in that case, because that is not a great place to meet new friends. Not always. I mean, there's opportunities, but this is just, you'll never find a more accepting, willing group of people. And they do stuff at drops of the hat. Like, we couldn't find one of the adapters for the Mac. It's a good Mac story here. Because, you know, that stupid DisplayPort adapters, they're annoying. But I, you know, whatever, we've traded it for thinner notebooks, and I'm happy about that too. But the point is that, you know, you sometimes lose an adapter or something, and somebody lost one just temporarily, and I swear the whole building scrambled to get us something. And someone overheard somebody say, we weren't even saying it on the mic. Somebody just overheard it. That spread to somebody else. That spread to somebody else. Before you knew it, we had like 12 to 13 people, hands raised to the stage saying, here's my adapter if you need it. That kind of thing is rare. Like, just this kick in, you know, like, I can't imagine a better, like, if the world suddenly fell away and all there was Snowbird and a rock underneath it to hold it up and enough food to last 10 years, I would rather be with this group than anywhere else. Yeah. Because I know that we're all in it together and we would all back each other up, and nobody's here to give anybody a hard time or to take advantage of anybody or any of that. And we're open and willing to have anybody. Like, we had people, we had a guy here this year, and I keep saying a guy because it's my own built-in idiocy, but he's transgender, and so cool, so nice, and told me, I just feel so comfortable here. Well, if that's what we're, if we're providing even just that for people who just need to be themselves, whoever they are, then kudos to Nerdtacular for being the place that can do that. But that isn't so much me. I mean, sure, I can foster it or inspire it or whatever, but at the end of the day, I think it's just them bringing their own greatness and sharing it and being willing to. And by the end of it all, I only hate the last day, like today, because it's just, I hate saying goodbye and I hate everybody leaving. And then I'm going to have like, we always have about a week of me just going, this is not as fun as it was last week, is it? You know? So I think that's what drives, in a lot of ways, it's a ton of work. We don't really make any money, not a lot. It's enough to cover costs. So there's no big, huge motivation on that part of it. It takes a huge chunk of stress out of me every year. It's a lot to prepare for. I worry about it and stress about it because I'm just that kind of guy. And then when it finally comes, I want to make sure everyone's having a good time. That first day is all about, is everyone having fun? Everyone having fun? And by the time it ends, I'm like, what wasted energy. They all had fun. Everybody had a great time. And I wish we were doing it again. So, yeah, it's always a really mixed bag on the last day. But this year couldn't have gone better. Everything was just awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I know, so people know geek culture, games, video games, podcasting. You guys had great podcasting track that I heard lots of great feedback about. So if you're looking for a conference and a place to go in July, every year you're going to have a July again.
Yeah, probably we're looking at, so we did it on the 4th 2 years in a row. Partially was to ensure that we had the space because this place is always rented out. So that was the main reason, but we are possibly looking at some later in July dates, which will help a lot of people who don't want to take off on around the 4th. That will be interesting, but the best way for people to keep track of how that's all going to go is just bookmark nerdtacular.com or Nerdtacular Show on Twitter. We'll always have announcements about what's coming. But we usually, this is usually what happens. This all happens. It was all great, but we're not going to, it won't be until like October before any real decision about anything is made. Which I really look forward to, like this chunk of time where I don't have to think about it, even though I love the memories of it. And the photos are going to come exploding off the internet soon, and we're going to have all this video footage we took, and people will be able to still enjoy it and celebrate it for a while to come. But it'll be nice to not have to think about it for a while.
Yeah, and then there's the live stream, right? So there's stuff for people to check out. So go to nerdtacular.com. There'll be stuff being posted. So if you didn't come this year, you can see what it's like, see what's going on, and of course Frog Pants. You know, follow all the shows there and things like that.
Yeah, and if you're into, I mean, I always tell people they don't know what I do. If you're into video games, comic books, TV, movies, the pop culture sort of touchstones that seem to be so prevalent today that were made me a nerd in high school but make technology. Me cool today, technology as well, it's absolutely a great place to be at frogpants.com, and they can catch lots of friend shows like Tom Merritt's Daily Tech News show is all part of the network now, and Veronica Belmont and him do this Sword and Laser show, which I love. It's all about books, science fiction, and fantasy. So there's pretty much an interest. I mean, the only thing we really don't have is like a sports show. And I don't know that we ever will, but I think that's covered. The world's got enough of that. But if you're into just about every other aspect of that, including just a regular daily morning show, you're going to find something to like there. And moreover, we just have great personalities and people with interesting things to say. And, you know, there's never a dull moment if you want a lot of good content.
All right. Well, Scott, thanks for another awesome, awesome year. Thanks for the interview. Thanks for showing us the app. And if people want to just follow you, where can they find you?
Best place would be @ScottJohnson on Twitter. It's just my full name. And frogpants.com is where you're going to find everything else. And there's a lot of stuff coming up this summer I haven't even talked about yet. A lot of secret projects and stuff. I'm super stoked. I kind of had to get this out of the way before I could start talking about them. But thank you for having me. And I've never told you this. Maybe I have. But you were one of the first 4, maybe 5 podcasts I ever heard after the term podcasting had become a name. So forever fan of the Mattcast. I always love being on here, so thanks for letting me do it.
All right, thank you. It's Brian Dunaway here with me at Nerdtacular, host of, well, host of Comics Coast to Coast, also on Film Sack and Final Score, all on Frog Pants. Of course, we're at Nerdtacular, and we are playing again What the App Is That? So I grabbed Brian's phone, looked through, and we've got Polyvore. What is Polyvore, Brian?
Polyvore allows you to design by dragging and dropping pictures of either furniture or clothing. Basically, it's a wish app. You wish that you were able to design a wonderful room in your house, and so you could either be boring and get some architecture design and look and draw your own, or you can use something like Polyvore, which is a service, and they have an app, which I downloaded. Allows you to look through these different stores, fancy stores like Macy's and, you know, Christian Dior and all these things that you may not be able to buy, and even the stuff like Etsy. But you get on here, and it's hooked up to all these other shopping sites. You find something that you want, you drag it onto a new sheet, and you just keep dragging stuff. So, like, if you found a red couch that you really love, you're like, oh, I love that red couch, and you put it in there. And then you say, well, you know what? I'd like to add like a mirror in that room too, like a red mirror. So you go and you dig through and you search and you find mirrors and you find a red mirror. You drag that and it lays it out all into one nice sheet. So you use Photoshop. If you haven't used Photoshop, Photoshop allows you to use layers, which is revolutionary at the time. And it's brilliant now too. But that's what happens when you put each object goes on its own layer. So you can move it around. And kind of you can put a bean bag behind your couch, and it's kind of a mental reference and note of what the room will look like. It's not accurate. It's just kind of like a visual cue card.
Right. So it's like one of these sort of pin board, or I have an app called Mood Board that I use for like design stuff, but this would be more for like products and things that you want. So I'm assuming you can kind of like categorize things. You can say, oh, this is a room that I want to build, or this is just some cool accessories I want, those sorts of things.
Exactly. And the flip side to Polyvore is if you're someone who is a designer, you're into design, you can, once you've created these pages, you can upload it to Polyvore, and then you can link to it, and you can show other people. It's like, oh, look how sweet I am. I'm making this really sweet couch and chair and everything. And I also believe there's an affiliation or an affiliate aspect of this too, if you really get in with Polyvore, and you can actually get money from sales. Like if you found a couch that's fantastic and you put it on there and people go to that and they click on it, you'll get that click through and hopefully maybe make a small percentage of money from that. So it's advantageous to the hobbyist and the professional.
So like, and yeah, and so you were saying it's like multiple stores and things like that. So you don't have to go to all these different websites. You can just search through the Polyvore app and find a bunch of different couches, maybe find a few that you like and kind of shuffle them off and things like that. Makes it finding things easier. And can you buy through the app, or does it just kind of shuffle you off to the site, do you know?
Right. You don't actually buy in app. It does shuffle you off to the site. That's a really probably a positive, because if they get much more tied in, I wouldn't trust them. They're pretty tied in right now, these other stores.
Right. So you don't have to search all over the web to find your cool stuff, and you can kind of get it all in one place. Well, that's really cool and really helpful, I think, to a lot of people. So you mentioned it, like a little bit like Pinterest, but more focused on products and things like that.
Exactly. So yeah, the part I don't use is the beauty part, because there's no beauty in me. So, but you could certainly make an entire wardrobe for your fall clothes and I don't need that. As you can see now, which you can't see, I'm in my pajamas.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like you.
That's a 14, yeah.
Woo-hoo, it was great. We just finished up. You want to tell people about your shows and things like that, and where they can find you and follow you and do all that fun stuff?
Absolutely. Easiest to find everything I do at briandunaway.com. I do a once-a-week podcast called Comics Coast to Coast, where we talk to other cartoonists, and we do the Final Score, which is a video game podcast, and Film Sack, which we had a great Film Sack, by the way, live one. And if you have never been to Nerdtacular, you should follow Adam over here to Nerdtacular in Utah in beautiful Snowbird. And that's it, man. And you can follow me on Twitter, I suppose, at the Brian Dunaway.
Awesome. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Adam. You're awesome.
All right, Hammond from the Grumpy Cast and Beyond the Playlist here again at Nerdtacular. We're playing What the App Is That? And you've got an app on here called Music Tool, which I've never seen before. So I'm assuming you're a musician. What is Music Tool?
Music Tool is actually a tool that gets you into the right key structure and the right scales, so you can start building chords and actually building songs, kind of like a scratch pad. So you can start putting things together and see what sounds good. So you can start structuring your music quickly so that when you sit down with your instrument, you have kind of an idea of where you're heading and what it's going to sound like.
All right. So you open it up and we've got, let's see, with the first interface, there's like some keys, things like that, and you can kind of tap on them. Gives you some chords, it sounded like?
Yeah. What you can do is you can actually hit get individual notes inside the scale, or when you turn it vertically, it gives you the notes that are in the chord structure that you need, and then the different major sustain four and major seventh. So as you go through, you can start hearing how the chords will sound as you play them. And so you can start building your rough version of your song as you're messing with this, making notes. And you can go back and put it down, and you kind of know what you're looking at when you get going.
So does it have any kind of recording or anything like that? Or so can you start actually building these out, or is it more just a tool for kind of getting into the right framework for, I'm assuming, for like composing and things like that?
Yeah, it does not have a recording, but it gives you enough so that you can start actually writing things down and knowing your scales, the different type of scales. So you can have the Ionian and Dorian and Mixolydian and all that kind of stuff you need. And you can change it from the different key signatures. So you can go from like C to A minor or A sharp. And it gives you all that the different change. And so you can start playing with it in different key signatures as well.
So how do you use this tool?
I play an instrument called the Chapman Stick, and it's very much based on the way you use your chord structure. So I can sit down, mess with this, get an idea of where I want my chords to go, then grab the stick with the notes I've taken, and kind of have an idea of where I'm going, kind of leads me down a path. So as I'm creating something new, I know what chord structures will work and what won't work as I'm writing.
That's very, very cool. So a nice little simple app. It looks like, remind me of the name again, it's called Music Tool, and so people should check that out. And you do a couple podcasts, you want to let people know about those and where they can find you and find your podcast and things like that?
Sure, I do Grumpy Cast with Daryl Skeels, the Trek Nerd, from the Morning Stream. That goes up every other week, and then I do a show called Beyond the Playlist, where I interview creative types, musicians, podcasters, writers, artists, whatever. And that goes up typically on Sundays and Wednesdays.
All right, very cool. Well, Hammond, thanks so much for showing us Music Tool, and thanks for being on.
Thank you very much.
Tom Merritt here at Nerdtacular 2014. You might know him from Sword and Laser, Current Geek, or Daily Tech News Show. I'm sure you've heard him. But we're playing What the App Is That? So I perused through Tom's iPhone, and I found an app called Heyday. So what is Heyday, Tom?
Heyday is an app that looks at your photo library and by the meta tags can tell what date the photo was taken on. And if there's location data, it'll put that on a map as well. And it's just fun for looking back if you're like me and you hoard all your photos. Like I have photos from Podcast Expo in Ontario on this phone still. They've been carried over. So like today I can look at Heyday and it'll say, you know, 1 year ago, you were at the Hyatt Place Hotel in Salt Lake City, because we were staying there right before we headed out from Nerdtacular. What's really fun is when it does, like, 5 years ago, you were here, 10 years ago, you were there, and it's just like, on this day, this is what I was doing. It's a little memory app.
Right, so it's like photo app discovery, but just based on current day. They've had, like, there was a Twitter app that does that, too. I can't remember what it's called now.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
Yeah, so similar kind of thing. But so it makes it easy to kind of go back and find those memories and things like that. I love the user interface.
Yeah, it's a really cool little nifty app if you're into instant nostalgia. Some people might not be, but yeah, it's like showing me pictures of my dog from April 2013. It's just a fun way to look at your photo library.
I like the Newton 2 megabyte PCI MCIA card there.
Oh, what, did that flash by?
Yeah.
I don't remember what that was from, actually. That's hilarious.
I had a 4 megabyte one.
And my foot was just on there. I don't know why.
And so it's not just, so you can bring up the current day, but then it looks like there's a vertical scroll kind of thing that goes through. And then like
and you show your most recent by day.
Most recent by day. And then also you can tap into a photo and look like there were a bunch of different options. I'm assuming some sharing options, those sorts of things, map and...
Yeah, you can create collages, you can do filters on it, and then share photos out. I think the idea, and I never do this, but I think the idea is that if you want to celebrate a day and you've got pictures from somebody's birthday, say, from 5 years ago, you could share those photos with the person themselves.
Right, so you can kind of share those old memories. Say, hey, remember that time we were at Podcast Expo?
Right, remember when you were younger? Here's a picture of you then, yeah.
Or when you look better, or... Yeah, those sorts of things.
There's the rabbit. I was by a rabbit on the plane right out here, actually.
Seriously?
Yeah, he's there in the cage with a little carrot next to him.
I guess that's better than a yippy dog.
Yeah, definitely. No, the rabbit was very quiet.
Well, very, very cool. So it's called Heyday. Do you remember if it's, is it free?
I think it was free when I downloaded it, Heyday. But I it may have charges now. I haven't checked in a while.
All right, and you can do filters and all kinds of fun stuff. So if you want to sort of expose your old photos, and I'm assuming they have to be on the device, right?
Right. It has to be on the device as far as I know. At least that's the way I use it.
Right. Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks, Tom. Now, let's talk. Oh, did you see something else?
There's a cloud sync function I just found.
Okay, so maybe you can actually sync up with some of your photos in the cloud if you want to, you know, find a specific event or something like that, I would assume.
And there's the Instagram integration, too, I forgot about.
All right, so it makes it easy to share, find, all that fun stuff. Well, that's a cool little app. I might actually have to grab that one now. So just let everybody know about your shows, what you're doing, where they can find you, all those fun things.
Sure. TomMerritt.com, two R's, two T's, is the main place where I'll have a list of all my shows. If you're interested in subscribing, you can see posts of the shows as they come across. Daily Tech News Show, DailyTechNewsShow.com is probably the most interesting thing to people who are into tech. And Current Geek with Scott Johnson, we kind of wrap up the week in geeky news every time.
All right, very cool. Well, thanks, Tom.
Thank you, man.
All right, we've got Patrick Beja now, and we're going to be talking about an app called, well, we're playing What the App Is That, and the app that I found is Alien Blue. So what is Alien Blue?
So Alien Blue is, I could say it factually, but I'm going to put a little bit of emphasis in it. It is the app that will make you discover that you love Reddit. When you thought you hated it.
Yeah, that sounds like an app for me because I've tried Reddit, I don't get it. So, yeah, so is this going to help me get Reddit?
That sounds like a jingle. I tried Reddit, I don't get it. Yeah, yeah. Basically, I was like you. I had heard about Reddit for a long time. It's a super awesome, active community, and I wanted to get into it and at least to find out what was so cool about it for a long time. And the problem is the interface, the UI on the web is absolutely awful, and it's, in my opinion at least, not very conducive to a lot of browsing. I know there are a lot of people who spend a lot of time on the site as it is, and I know there are also, you know, Chrome expansions and extensions and stuff like that that make it a little bit better, but the one thing that really got me into it was that app called Alien Blue. You know, the little symbol is a blue alien for Reddit. And so that app is just rearranges the UI so that you have... So do we need to explain what Reddit is?
I think a little bit. You know, my short synopsis when I got in there, it's like the modern version of NNTP, if anybody remembers that, right?
Oh, my God. That is exactly the way I always go. It's exactly a modern, you know, newsgroup site. It's basically a site where you will you can input, like you can create a group
like
by
a channel.
Topic. Yeah, like a channel, or you know, it's a group of it's a topic, and anyone can post any link or comment about that topic on that page, and anyone can then go and comment, you know, about what was posted, and people can vote up or down. It's kind of like what, you know, Dig was, and it sort of took Dig's place when that went away. So it's like one central place for everyone to gather around their topic. And there are an incredible amount of different topics. So really, anything you like that you want to have a central place to talk about and find out about, you can go to Reddit, and there's probably going to have a subreddit for that.
We have to say goodbye to Veronica Belmont.
Goodbye, Veronica Belmont.
Is that it? You're done?
That's like, it. We're done. Yeah.
Okay. So,
bye, Patrick. I've already called
you. We have to say goodbye.
We're saying goodbye to Scott Johnson now, too. This is what happens. Last day of Nerdtacular. All the goodbyes is sad. We talked about that earlier with Scott. So,
with Tom and Scott.
No, we talked about how sad it is saying goodbye at Nerdtacular with Scott on his interview. So,
right. So, you then have all of these places that you can go and about all of these topics. The problem is the UI being crappy, you're not really doing it. But Alien Blue, especially on the iPad, it is on the iPhone as well, but especially on the iPad, it organizes everything in a way that is so intuitive and so easy to navigate. And honestly, on Reddit, there is so much good stuff. It's basically where people discover stuff. You know, there are different communities on the internet. 4chan is where a lot of the memes and things like that surface. But then the next step is Reddit before they go viral on other places. So if you want to discover stuff, you can go there. And there are also tons of interesting, like genuinely interesting people and topics to browse. So you have this interface that will put for all of the Reddits, the subreddits you're subscribed to, it will put all of the most popular topics in sequence, and you will click them and see what's in that, you know, topic. And it just, that's basically just it. It's just a better interface. And I browse it all the time, and I post to Twitter a lot of those finds. And people usually ask me how, you know, where it comes from. I do the little hashtag Reddit, but people ask me how I get all this. And I never stop telling them, Alien Blue is what will make you love Reddit.
So it has a social app integration. Can you share right from there?
Of course. It has social app integration. It has different modes of viewing the content you're viewing, optimized so it doesn't eat up too much bandwidth. There is everything you can think of. You can input all of your social accounts, and you have Pocket, and you have, you know, all of those. I really can't think of any faults that you could give that app. I think Reddit should buy them and just make them their official app.
Make it the official app. Well, I'm going to have to definitely check that one out. So, Patrick, I know that you've done podcasts with Frog Pants and the whole network and stuff like that, but you're doing a lot of French stuff now. So you want to just mention that real briefly? Because we've got an international audience. They might want to know about some of that stuff.
Sure, with pleasure. So I'm actually French, so I do a lot of podcasting in French. My main show, I guess, which would be of interest to your audience, is Le Rendez-vous Tech, which is a French tech news show bimonthly. And it's pretty cool. I enjoy it. So if you do speak French or want to speak French or want to brush up on your high school French, you could try that. It's really fun. Le Rendez-vous Tech.
All right. Check that out. And if they want to follow you on Twitter, online, all that stuff.
Twitter is at NotPatrick, which is really easy to remember. So go there. You'll find everything else from there. NotPatrick.
Thank you so much, Patrick.
Thanks a lot, Adam.
Justin Robert Young from Night Attack. We're going to be doing What the App Is That? And I grabbed his phone right on the home screen, something called Daedalus.
Daedalus, yeah. So I do a lot of writing. Oh. Like, or at least I've been trying to be better at it. I used to be a newspaper journalist in a former life, and I've tried to get more into kind of short form fiction writing or essay writing. So a friend of mine, Andrew Main, who's a published author and a really good friend of mine, recommended this app, Daedalus, which is really cool in how they organize like different stacks of stories. So you can go in there, but what is really rad about it is when you open it up, it has a lot of really smart tabs. So you can add in parentheses or slashes or like the keyboard. It has a special keyboard that's very, very well designed. The other rad thing is that it syncs through iCloud. So, for example, I wrote like two or three short stories like on my phone just as like, I wanted to eliminate the excuse of like, well, I'm not in front of my computer, it's not Sunday, the sun's not out, I don't have my chai latte, like, I can't write, I'm not in the mood. I always wanted to get very utilitarian about, I have 5 minutes, I'm on a plane, I can't sleep, let's write. But the downside about doing that on your phone is that sometimes phones fail. So my phone, I had an old iPhone that, or actually it was a 5S, that the home button stopped working. So I bought it into an Apple store, they gave me a new one, and then I, as my phone was refreshing, my other phone, they're like, hey, are you sure I can delete everything on it? And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever, I don't got anything on there, everything syncs. And then I realized, like, oh my God, I have 3 stories on there that I'm gonna have to completely rewrite. Not with Datalist. Datalist saved everything to my iCloud. When I opened up Datalist and the new phone, everything was right there. So it also syncs. There's a desktop program that I can't remember that's made by the same people that'll sync right there. It's really, really good for markup writing if anybody does that kind of stuff. So I highly recommend it as just a utilitarian, just sit down and don't have any excuses, just write.
So it's a text writing app. I love the extra keys, you know, for, like you're saying, putting in parentheses, all those common things. You're doing a quote, you got double quotes in. I'm assuming it puts the insertion point right in between. Yeah, so you get one tap.
Yeah, you have a good, like, indent tab. I mean, it's made for people to write all the time and to have it be easy and just sort of eliminate a lot of the barriers that go into why you would find it frustrating or uncomfortable.
I want to talk about the stacks a little bit. So this is a pure writing app. So everything I'm looking at in here, because you got a bunch of stories in here, this is all stuff that you're writing and working on.
Yeah. Or it's like, you know, I just have an idea. It's better to write it down than to let it go to race, you know?
So it's not, it's pure, I with how many stories I thought, oh, but, you know, is there research that gets pulled in? But no, this is just right. But it seems like then you can organize things into little sort of stacks and categories.
Yeah, so you organize everything into different stacks. So here, this is like the thing that I'm working on now is this short story collection that'll be about travel stuff. And I have, you know, just little notes here in my travel short story stack. I can then, you know, retitle that, or I can swipe down and it brings me to the stack menu again. I can start a new one, or I have all these other, I have 1 week story ideas, a script for a video I did called Mustache Rape, which is awkward to say. And then a bunch of other, like, just little sketch ideas or ideas, bits for the podcast that I just want to write down.
I love the UI on this. So it's got a perfect touch UI, swiping through your stacks.
Yeah.
Finding stuff looks really easy.
Yeah, it is. And it's, it's, I love apps that just kind of rethink the user interface, like, and that don't just all of a sudden look like all the other, like, you know, when iOS 7 came out, all of a sudden you just got this new coat of paint and it just looked like kind of the stuff that Apple did for the menus in iOS 7. I love apps that really just put in that extra effort to think, well, that's cool, like, that looks good and it'll fit well with your phone, but what can we do that is unique to our purpose, you know? And if this is like, you want to have, you know, you want to be easily able to find where all your different ideas are, and then drill down and find exactly what you want very quickly, this was such a fun solution.
All right, cool. Datalist, check that out. If people want to find your podcast, follow you, check out the stuff that you're working on and doing, how can they do that?
Easiest way is at Twitter, Justin R. Young on Twitter. You can also find Night Attack, nightattack.tv, or you can see me and all of our merry gang of friends at diamondclub.tv. That's 24 hours. We always have just old episodes, or if you want to catch me, Brian Brushwood, Tom Merritt, Veronica Belmont streaming, that's usually where it is.
All right, awesome. Thanks, Justin.
Thank you.
There you have it, Nerdtacular 2014. Some great folks there, and the people that go to this show are awesome, as Scott alluded to in his segment when we talked to him. I absolutely love the show. I look forward to it every year. If any of you could ever make it out, if you're thinking about it, you should definitely check it out. Again, follow at nerdtacular.com or frogpants.com to stay up with everything that's happening there. And I hope to see you there next year. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors: Smile, makers of TextExpander PDF Pen, Disklabel, also TextExpander Touch for your iOS devices, along with PDF Pen for iPhone and iPad, and their latest app, PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can check out all their software and get more information and details over at smilesoftware.com. Gazelle, it's the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth over at gazelle.com. And lynda.com, it helps you keep up to date with your software, pick up brand new skills, or explore new hobbies with their easy-to-follow video tutorials. You can get a free trial by going to lynda.com/Maccast. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the show. A big thank you to you for your support, for staying subscribed. If you have any feedback for me, a comment, a question, maybe an app that you'd like to recommend, you can send your email to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on my listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave voicemail there. You can also leave voicemail on Skype, and my Skype username is TheMacCast. So call in any of those locations, leave me a voicemail. I always look forward to hearing from you. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, including the links to all the apps that were mentioned in the What the App Is That segment, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/maccast, or check out the Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMaccast. And we do have a Google Plus community. Just search for MacCast on Google Plus and you'll find us there. But that's every place to hang out between shows. That's going to do it for today. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.